Welcome back. This is Rude Awakening on CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto. As mentioned at the top of the broadcast, the G8 is taking place, is about to take place in Edinburgh, and there are a lot of people standing up to it, gathering to demonstrate against it. And on the line right now is one of the people who is in Scotland. I have Julian, a member of Brighton Defend. Julian, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, Julian, so good to hear your voice from across the Atlantic. Julian, how are things over where you are right now?
Well, right now, because the summit is not going to take place in Edinburgh, the summit is going to take place in Gleneagles, which is a small, it's actually a luxury golf hotel, about 60 miles north of Edinburgh. And I'm in the rural campsite, the Horizon Eco Village, where people are preparing to take part in blockades, and there's probably about 3,000 people here. And yeah, it's the calm before the storm, it's the day before the actions, and yeah, the mood is good.
I guess bringing up the Eco Village is a good start. Can you talk a little bit about some of the organizations that have come together to demonstrate around Gleneagles and around the rest of Scotland and the UK surrounding the G8? I understand there's a group called, kind of an umbrella term called the Descent Network. There's a few other groups that are out there. Can you talk a little bit about who has come together for this?
Well, there's a number of mobilizations. A few days ago, there was the big and extremely well-publicized Make Poverty History March, where 200,000 people turned out on the streets of Edinburgh to protest, to make poverty history. Now, that campaign has confined itself to just organizing a march several days before the summit. Now, there are other umbrella groups and networks that want to do actions on the day of the summit that try to actually shut down the summit. And there's two main mobilizations. One is called G8 Alternatives, which is a network of the Socialist Workers Party, the Scottish Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, Scottish Socialist Party, the Green Party. They're organising a march at Gleneagles that has been cleared with the police, and they're going to have buses and trains arriving there, and people are going to march to the fence. But that march has been cleared with the police. Then there is the more autonomous network Descent, which is not so much an organisation, but just a sort of loose confederation of working groups and local groups around the country that are organizing different actions also tomorrow on the 6th. And in that network Descent, there's groups from all the way from Brighton to the north of Scotland. There's working groups organizing clown, there's a group called the Clown Army, which is not directly part of the centre, but is mobilizing with us. There's Samba groups, there's blockade groups, there's a working group called the People's Golfing Association. They're going to have a radical golf tournament, which is going to involve blockading different points around Scotland. And within the campsite here, we're currently working on mass blockades of the roads that are going to lead to the actual summit.
Talk a little bit more about the Eco Village. It's a term that's come up before in connection with other summit demonstrations around the world. What exactly is the Eco Village about?
Well, the Eco Village, you know that from in this globalization critical network, we always get asked what our alternatives are. We're always portrayed as against what's called the anti-globalization movement. When we set up these kinds of camps, they're on one hand, they're bases for planning actions and for people to live and not have to check into youth hostels. But on a more political level, they're also part of something that we call prefigurative politics, that we want to live our politics now and practice our politics now and organize social relations society in the ways that we think are better than the ones today. So here we've got different autonomous kitchens serving food to thousands of people on a donation basis. There's a self-managed space. People are getting together in different working groups to self-organize and manage the space, like organize the door, organize the toilet system, organize the food, organize spokes councils. So it's very much trying to live our politics and not always be portrayed as antis, but showing that you can live in a sustainable and self-managed way without creating complete chaos, even if you have several thousands of people involved in such projects.
Very interesting stuff, the idea of having a positive component to the actions. You brought up that a lot of these things are seen as anti-this, anti-that, and the idea of having providing alternative is something that has come up in the past along with other demonstrations, the idea of providing some kind of alternative system of politics and economics and existence. Question, did you have much contact with people that were around Edinburgh yesterday? I understand there was kind of a carnival atmosphere around parts of that city yesterday, including clowns.
Yeah, there was an action yesterday. It was called the Carnival for Full Enjoyment, which was, the plan was to have different sound systems, basically street parties in the downtown area of Edinburgh to protest against the precarization of work, that work becomes more and more insecure, and just that the way we have to work right now takes the fun out of our lives. So there was different groups, there was different samba bands, there was from the United States, there was the Infernal Noise Brigade, people playing music, there were different sound systems dancing in the streets. The Clown Army, it's quite difficult to describe if you haven't seen it. It's people dressing up in clown gear and, as they put it, bringing out the inner clown, trying to release and create joy even in the face of repressive police tactics. So what happened, and this is a specialty of the British police, is that massive numbers of police were trying to prevent people from gathering. Basically, the police were trying to stop people having a party, or several parties. And there's thousands of police surrounding groups. There's one group of maybe 100, 200 people that was locked in on a small side road from 12 noon to 5:30 p.m. The police used horses, horse chargers, dogs, basically to try and shut down what was simply to be a party. And the people on our side, I think, really kept quite calm in the face of police repression and tactics that are designed to irritate and provoke a response that could then be painted in the media as violent and very negative. But people still went ahead and had their parties, even if they were surrounded by the police. There was drummers inside the police kettles, people were dancing. So it was a very festive atmosphere, in spite of the fact that thousands of police are trying to prevent it.
It's a festive atmosphere. I actually saw some pictures of the Clown Army on UK indie media, and there was a sticker on one of them that said, "Capitalism is boring." Interesting way to put it. One other action that's not exactly around Glen Eagles proper, but I'm wondering if you can give our listeners some insight on. For those of you just tuning in, I'm speaking with Julian, a member of Brighton Defend. He's one of thousands of people involved in demonstrations against the upcoming G8 meeting in Glen Eagles, Scotland. I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit about the Falsaine blockade, a blockade of a Royal Navy base in Scotland. Can you give a little bit of insight as to what that is all about?
The Faslane blockade is something that's been going on for a long time here in Scotland. Faslane is a nuclear submarine base where the nuclear submarines that constantly putter about our global oceans, and they still do, although the Cold War is over, are loaded at the Faslane base with their nuclear weapons, and then from there move off again. So there's a tradition here of a long-term tradition, although since I'm not from Scotland, I don't actually know how long the tradition has been going on, but for longer than 10 years at the very least, of the peace and anti-nuclear movement, to have non-violent blockades of this nuclear base to try and shut down access to the base, disrupt the smooth functioning of it. And yesterday, in the context of the G8 mobilizations, but also autonomous from that, lots and lots of people, I don't actually have numbers right now because I'm a bit busy with other stuff, so I haven't checked the media yet, how many people were there, but hundreds of people, if not thousands, were there to peacefully blockade this nuclear submarine base and show that the issues of the peace and anti-nuclear movement are still alive.
Very busy around the country right now. And I think you mentioned a little bit earlier on, but if you can mention what's going to be coming up around Glen Eagles proper once the summit begins?
Well, the summit is to begin tomorrow morning. Now, around Glen Eagles, sort of going geographically outward from there, early in the morning, on roads leading toward Glen Eagles, there will be blockades that are autonomously organized within this camp. That is to say, autonomously organized means there'll not be a single blockading point, but people will be making their way up to try to block different access routes to the summit, and hope that we can I guess in a sort of echo of Seattle, simply prevent the summit from starting by massively disrupting its logistics. And then in the early afternoon, the Mobilization G8 Alternative has organized a march at Glen Eagles that's been okayed by the police, and people are going to take buses and trains to get to that blockade. At the same time, there'll be lots of smaller autonomous blockades around the area of people that are maybe not right now in this camp or not even connected to the dissent or G8 Alternative mobilizations. Then there'll be something called the People's Golfing Act, the People's Golfing Association. It's something I can't really say much about because I don't know much about it, but people have said that because the Glen Eagles luxury hotel where world leaders are going to supposedly be discussing poverty reduction is also a golf course. And so people have said that one is going to have golfing tournaments at different points that are to be blockaded, again, access routes to the G8 and points where leaders might be trying to move through. So those are the different actions that's going to be happening, and it's hard to say right now. I forget. There's also in the cities, Glasgow and Edinburgh, two main cities of Scotland, there's going to be roving road blockades there, again trying to disrupt the logistics and make access to for leaders and staff to the Glen Eagles site very difficult.
A little bit earlier in this particular broadcast, I ran a series of interviews with a Kenyan activist named Ivy Maina, who's came on a bus trip from Johannesburg to Scotland deliver a message directly to Tony Blair regarding the G8 and aid to Africa. Have you had a chance to meet people from outside the UK at the Eco Village or anywhere else leading up to later this week?
At the Descent Convergence Space in Edinburgh, just a few days ago, I think 2 days ago, but days do tend to blend together here in a sort of flurry of activity. I think 2 days ago, there was a workshop organized at the Descent Convergence Space, bringing in activists from African grassroots social movements to tell us a bit about that perspective on the issues that the G8 claims to be talking about, namely making poverty in Africa history. And it's really interesting that the campaigns, say, Make Poverty History or Our Great Leaders, have actually not at all been listening to African grassroots social movements. It's once again here, northerners or people from the ex-colonial powers talking about how, it's basically white people talking about how to best save black people and white people disagreeing with other white people how to best save black people. Now, African grassroots social movements, many of them have been very angry about this approach and about not being consulted, not being part of the process of this whole Making Poverty in Africa History campaign. Now, so I met some very, very powerful speakers. One guy named Kirby from the Pan-African Network, I think was the network that he was from. He was saying, take the issue of debt relief. While social movements in the north might be talking about unconditional debt relief, and our leaders are talking about debt relief conditional on the imposition of neoliberal policies, radical African grassroots social movements, like, for example, those that are in the African Social Forum, have actually been talking not about debt relief, not just about debt relief, but about historical reparations. That is to say, they've started to talk about the enormous historical debt that the former colonial powers owe former colonized countries. If you try to add up, including interest rates, which is what debt, of course, always includes interest rates, the historical debt that we in the North owe countries in the global South due to the slave trade, due to the imposition of unfair terms of trade, and due to colonialism, you get to enormous numbers. And when you take such a radical perspective, you see how people in the African continent are trying to really turn the whole global economic system on its head and not just sit on the top and give, as one of the more, let's say, soft-peddling slogans of the demonstration on the second put it, more and better aid. That's not even what they're talking about. They're talking about historical reparation. They're talking about a change in the whole global economic system. And they don't want just white people disagreeing with white people about how to save Africa. They say the agenda has to come from Africa and has to come from the African grassroots.
You bring up go ahead.
When you said, have I met people from the African continent, I have, and it's been very, very inspiring, and it's really changed my perspective. And I can only urge people to try and find information about this, find information about the African Social Forum, find out what people in Africa are talking about, and not just what different activists or groups in the North are talking about.
There's a heavy focus on Africa in this particular G8 meeting. There's been a lot of discussion, as you mentioned, about debt relief in the run-up to it. But what other issues or struggles are people bringing to the actions around Glen Eagles that might get lost in the media chatter?
Well, there's a big focus here on climate change. Some of the actions I haven't... There's so many actions, it's a bit hard to keep them all in my head. There are going to be several actions. I think it's on the 8th, but it may be the 7th, about climate change, because Tony Blair, who's hosting, the British Prime Minister, who's hosting the Glen Eagles Summit, has made the two following issues key on his agenda: debt relief for Africa and climate change. Now, a lot of people here, at least I can say that the G8 or Blairite agenda on climate change is not only inadequate or too little too late, it's also counterproductive. If you take the Kyoto Agreement, which has really ridiculously low emissions reduction targets, way below what scientists have said would be necessary to stop global warming, not only has that treaty not been signed due to US opposition, but the very treaty is completely bankrupt by proposing emissions trading as a way to reduce carbon emissions. Emissions trading basically means that if you want to continue polluting, if you're a company and want to continue polluting, in spite of the emissions reduction target set in the Kyoto Agreement, assuming it will ever be signed, then you can buy somebody else's emission credits. So you can say, all right, I'm going to buy from, say, Brazil, the right to pollute the environment more if Brazil uses the money that I give it to plant so-called carbon sinks, that is, forests that are supposed to take in carbon emissions and store them for the future. And that's based on extremely dodgy science. We don't actually know whether that's going to work at all. And to believe that the further marketization of natural resources is going to be the cure to a process that started with the marketization of natural resources and is based on that seems completely ludicrous and counterproductive. So that's why there's going to be actions around climate change and the sources of climate change around the Scottish oil industry and others that are supposed to highlight these issues and say that the G8 agenda is completely insufficient and counterproductive. And I guess right now, climate change and poverty in Africa is not... Poverty in Africa is not about poverty in Africa. It's about a whole global economic system. It's about the imposition of trade-led, foreign investment-led development on countries in the global south, where almost all activists from grassroots social movements from the global south that I've ever talked to are completely opposed to the imposition from the north of export-led development, because it destroys their food security, that is, the ability of communities in the global south to provide food for themselves, makes them dependent on the vagaries of the world market, and it generally goes along with violently pushing people, pushing peasants off the land, and destroys local ecosystems by enforcing monocultures designed to grow cash crops for export. So these are some of the issues that are very much on my mind, and I think on the mind of a lot of people here. But of course, there is also the fact that in the camp, for example, right now, we get bogged down in practicalities, and it'll also be very much about the debate after the actions, and we hope that the actions that we're going to take are going to open some space to debate the questions and not let them get completely co-opted by leaders of the like of Blair and Schröder.
Julian, I'm not going to keep you on the line much longer. For those of you who are just tuning in now at 10 to 7 a.m., I'm speaking with Julian, a member of Brighton Defend, and one of the many, many people who from across the UK and around the world are gathering around Glen Eagles, Scotland, to oppose the upcoming G8 meeting there. You referenced Seattle earlier on in this segment. Mentioned that the atmosphere in Edinburgh was kind of like Seattle way back in 1999. Do you think that this might be kind of a return to the mass anti-capitalist actions that marked 1998, 99, 2000, 2001? And do you think there might be a linkage to the anti-war movement once again, since that has been kind of the focus of the past few years? Do you see that happening?
Well, the way I see it is that a friend of mine referred to the time between 99, let's say between Seattle and 9/11, as the time when we were winning, the time when we were dominating the agenda, when institutions like the World Bank, the WTO, the IMF were suffering a serious loss of legitimacy, and our ideas about trade and development were simply becoming too powerful for them to block. You have quotes from World Bank and WTO people throwing their hands up and saying, oh my God, these people know the issues better than we do. What happened then with 9/11 and other factors coming in was that that power closed off that discussion and shifted its agenda to war, terror, and security. Now, of course, people in the globalization critical movement or anti-capitalist movement were involved in anti-war actions, but that was a defensive movement. We were on the back foot against their agenda, whereas 2 years before we had been pushing the agenda. Now, the what I call power's agenda, war, security, terror, is weakening. And the issues that we talked about a few years ago are coming up again for discussion. Now, one of the reasons why Blair has been putting so much focus on how he's a nice guy and wants to have debt relief and take care of climate change is in order to occupy these issues before we can get our foot in and say, no, 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 you're still not the right people to talk about this issue. We still want to shut down your institutions, and we still don't think what you're doing about it is anywhere adequate and is, in fact, counterproductive. So that's the struggle that's going on right now. The atmosphere yesterday in Edinburgh was maybe not as, it wasn't as big and as in a positive way crazy as Seattle, but I have the hope that if we can seriously disrupt the summit tomorrow, that it would precisely sort of presage the return to these big anti-capitalist actions, because while I think it's really, really important to work locally and actually practice and live alternative economics and social arrangements and self-management, I also think these big actions are important because they create, on the one hand, they create attention, on the other hand, they get people involved, because not everybody is just going to start joining their local co-op right away. Maybe they start first going to demonstrations and they start going to civil disobedience. These things are really important to keep ourselves on the agenda and to get people involved, and I really have the hope that with the actions tomorrow and in the days after, that we can resurrect these mass anti-capitalist protests. So I think they were very important for a while, and I think we can make them important again.